Well, I'm excited today. We're starting a brand new series. The series is called Faith Works, the message of the letter of James. I'm excited because this is going to be a very practical series and also critically important because faith is a rather important subject, isn't it? Faith is vital to our salvation. What we're going to talk about is what is the essence of faith? What does faith look like? We're going to flesh that out. One of the key verses in James' letter is in chapter 2, verse 17. It says, "Faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead." You see, faith, when you have living, authentic faith, it's never alone. It never travels alone. It always has someone along with it. Works, good deeds. According to the American Institute of Architects, 64% of architectural firms have reported recently an increased interest in outdoor backyard spaces. People want a paradise right outside their back door, a place where they can escape the stresses of life, they can gather and spend time with family, the kids can play. All this can occur right at home without ever leaving. That's what people want, or at least that's what they say they want. There was a book written in 2012 called Life at Home in the 21st Century. The book records research done in Los Angeles with middle-class families. The research was performed by the UCLA, and what they did is they actually took film and footage of families, and they recorded how families spend their time inside or outside, particularly. Now, people said they wanted these backyard spaces, would spend time. They said they do spend time out there, but what they found in this research is, in fact, they don't. So let's talk about it for a moment. Let's try to figure it out. Here this is now. Get the setting. This is sunny, beautiful California, Los Angeles. These families have beautiful backyard spaces. They have all the patio furniture. Some of them have swimming pools. This is all right there for them. How much time do you think the average family spent in their backyard in a given week? Let's begin thinking about kids. How much time do you think kids spent in 7-day period in their backyard? What do you think? What do you think? Come on. Half an hour. An hour. Anybody else? Zero. Okay. We're pretty close, actually. On average, the kids spent 40 minutes a week. So, yeah, we're talking, what is that, 6 minutes a day? Well, what about adults? Well, not as good. What would you guess on adults? And the answer is not quite zero, but it's not far off. 15. So we're talking a couple of minutes a day. So what the researchers discovered, they discovered there's a huge disconnect between what people believe and what they actually do. And they believe that this is good for them, good for their families. They want to spend time there. They intend to spend time there. And in some ways, they convince themselves that they are spending time in there, that they are utilizing it, but in fact, they're not. Well, this morning, as we begin to look at the letter of James, I just would simply point out to you that the same kind of disconnect can occur in the church and in our Christian lives. When we say and believe and intend certain things, but in reality, our life does not demonstrate or reflect those same things. James addresses this subject. He talks about the connection between faith and belief and what we say we hold to, and then how we live on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday night. And James hit this head on. He said, faith without deeds is dead. This morning, what I want to do is we introduce the series and give a brief overview of the book. Is I want to talk about two things related to faith. First of all, what faith is, We're going to spend most of our time this morning talking about what faith is. And then briefly at the end, we want to begin to highlight what faith does. What faith is and what faith does. So let's begin to think about what faith is. What is faith? Well, again, I would argue it's a fairly important question, is it not? You get that wrong, and it's disastrous in its results. And yet in our culture today, there are swirling winds outside the church and even blowing within the church that have distorted faith, its definition, its meaning, and its outworking. So I want to talk about some things that faith is not and then zero in on what it is. First of all, faith is not belief in spite of evidence, as some people would purport. It's not blind faith. Faith is not a leap in the dark. Would you let a random teenager perform bypass surgery on you? Do you give money to Nigerians who promise you a commission if you give them your credit card information through an email? Would you jump into the back of a van in a dark alley down in Pittsburgh? Why not? Don't you have faith? You see, that's what some people equate as faith. It's just this blind leap in the dark, despite or in spite of evidence. And that idea, that conception of faith, is permeating our culture. It's put forth largely by prominent atheists. One atheist hero today is Oxford's Richard Dawkins. He said it this way: faith is the great cop-out, the great excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. Faith is belief in spite of, even perhaps because of, the lack of evidence. And that's the idea people have. Your neighbors, your coworkers, your classmates, when you talk about your faith, they think, duh, you check your brains at the door. You go to church. You believe in that old book written by dead people long ago? Don't you think? But that concept, though it's embraced even by some within the church, is so far from the biblical picture and understanding and definition of faith. It's not even close. In the New Testament, the word for faith is pistis, coming from a root word, pistuo, which means to convince by argument. To convince by argument. A key verse in understanding faith is Hebrews 11:1, which says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. You see, it's being certain of what we do not see. And the word certain, in some translations, says evidence. My friends, do you think there's evidence for what we believe? Is there evidence for what you believe? We can't see it, but there's evidence that it's there. It's real. God is real. So understand, faith is not some blind leap. It's not jumping off a cliff into the dark, into nothingness. Faith in faith, that's not what it is. There's plenty of evidence for what we believe. Secondly, faith is not merely believing something is true. It's not just simply saying something is true. There's a God, Jesus actually lived, he died on a cross. Now, James addressed this head on in his letter. He said in chapter 2, you believe there is one God, good. Even the demons believe that and they shudder. So faith is more than just assenting in our mind and acknowledging something is real or true. It's more than that. So what is it? What is faith? Well, historically, Orthodox Christianity has identified three critical elements that comprise faith. Knowledge, assent, and trust. Knowledge, assent, and trust. And we're going to talk about those three and understand them because this is critically important. So let's think about first knowledge, noticia, the Latin term. Listen carefully. Faith, biblical faith, is directed toward an object. It's not faith that saves us. It's the object of our faith. It's the person in whom we've placed our faith. It's knowledge of God, of who he is, and of ultimate reality found in him through the person of Jesus Christ. And the Bible affirms this aspect of faith. I want you to keep your finger in James 1. We're going to look at the first verse in a little bit. I want you to go back to John's Gospel, the Gospel of John, chapter 20 and verse 31. In that place, John describes why he wrote 20 chapters recounting and recording Jesus and his miracles and identifying him, describing him. He describes why he wrote that. Look at chapter 20, verse 31. He said, these are written. What are these? All these previous pages in his gospel recounting Jesus and his miracles, his teachings. He said, all these were written that you may believe. And then here's the key word. Underline it, circle it. That, believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. There's content. I'm giving you all this information so you'll have the information, the knowledge that you believe that. You believe that information about who he is. And Paul used the same kind of idea, the same aspect of faith in Romans chapter 10, a familiar passage, when he said, believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. So it's a belief that. It's knowledge. You believe knowledge, a body of knowledge. In this case, the miracles of Jesus. And in the case of Romans chapter 10, that he actually rose from the dead. So there's knowledge, this knowledge base and component of faith. It's not empty. It's not a lack of evidence. There's knowledge that we accept and we embrace. That's the first aspect of faith. That's why it's so important when we share the gospel, we describe who God is. We describe who Jesus is. There's a content that is essential. The second aspect of faith, element of faith, is assent, a census, again, in Latin. You see, it's not simply enough to embrace this knowledge. Assent moves beyond the knowledge to where you accept the knowledge as being true and that it's beneficial to you, it's relevant to you. It's not just some abstract knowledge out there that you somehow embrace. Now you embrace it's true and it has bearing on my life, that the reality of who God is going to intersect with my experience at some point. It's real. I need to assent to that. I need to embrace it and accept it. So there's this knowledge, there's assent. And then the final area, this is so important, is trust. Trust, fiducia. This is critically important. If we don't get to that point, we're like the demons James described. Where you trust. And now, think about a verse that I think all of us know, at least in part. John 3:16. Can we say it together? Let's say it together. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. The key word again there, I want you to zero in on right now for our discussion. The key word is the word in. Before he said, believe that, a body of knowledge. Now he's saying, believe in. That's where you're moving from this knowledge. Okay, I believe it's true. I believe that. Where you're saying, I believe in him. Do you see the difference? Big difference. You see, you could watch a guy go across Niagara Falls on the tight wire with a wheelbarrow. You could watch him do that 100 times. And you could have knowledge that he's capable of doing it. You could even assent. Yeah, I think he's done it in the past. I think he could do it. But you don't trust him. You have not exercised faith until you trust that guy, climb into the wheelbarrow, and let him push you across. Do you understand? This is critically important. This is what James is talking about in his letter. What it really is. Now, let me give you another example, another illustration from Guy Richards. Hopefully this will help, because I want to zero in on this. We're going to talk about what faith does briefly. That's going to be the main focus of the series. But this morning, we have to understand what faith is. So with that idea in mind, knowledge, assent, and trust, just think about this. Imagine three people were dropped into a field with no food or water, and the field is filled with landmines. Landmines. And suppose the first guy, he kind of sits down, looks around, he charts out a map, and he just starts following his map, walking out without giving another thought. Obviously, that's not faith. Faith involves knowledge. There's no knowledge of anything. Let's imagine now that the other two remaining individuals, they're there looking around, and suddenly a helicopter appears overhead. The helicopter's hovering, and this voice comes out from an interested party, and the voice says, "This is the way out. Follow," kind of charts out the map. Suppose one of those two remaining individuals listens to the voice and begins following his directions. Is that faith? Not really. It's part. It's got two of the elements. It has knowledge. I think this third party is giving testimony that they have some knowledge of the way out. And I said this, beneficial to me, it might be right, but you have no idea who that person is. So how could you trust them fully? So the third element, imagine now, instead of simply blindly following the instructions, imagine the two remaining instead begin calling back and saying, "Now, wait a minute, who are you? Why are you here? Why are you interested in me? How do you know where the landmines are? Could you give me some references? Some people that I could check with who've known you?" And then based upon that information, you pick up some rocks and you start throwing them out in the path that they're guiding you to see if any landmines blow up, verifying the truthfulness and veracity of what they're telling you. And after all of that, when you know who they are, you understand, then you've moved beyond just assent, not beyond just knowledge, to personal trust in that individual, and they have the best interest for you, and they know the way out, and when you do that, you are exercising faith. That is what faith is. And there's much confusion today. People look to some date, they prayed a prayer, they said something, they say, "Well, yeah, I believe Jesus, I believe he died on the cross." That's not the point. The point is, do you know him? Are you trusting in him? Are you getting into the wheelbarrow and putting away and discarding and turning away from your own efforts to save yourself? Faith is knowledge of who God is, knowledge of your sin and your separation from him. It's assent to who God is in terms of what he did through Jesus Christ. You get it that he's interested in you. It's relevant to you. And finally, you put your trust in him and you rest in him. And my question to you today, before we ever get into the book of James, is, do you have saving faith? Do you have saving faith? It doesn't matter. We don't even read the book of James if you don't settle that question. Settle that question. And you may be saying, "Well, I do. My job is not to call. I'm not trying to create doubt," because we can have certainty. And one of the ways we have that certainty, listen carefully, is in the book of James. Because here's the thing. Listen carefully. Listen very carefully. Faith is never alone. The faith that saves is never alone. Faith alone saves us, but that faith is never alone. That's what James says. The whole argument is, when you have faith, it will be evident in what you do. And there'll be evidence of it in how you live. That's the main point he's making. So I want to make sure to clarify that when we talk about works, which we'll be doing, and the deeds that James describes, we're not saved by the deeds. The deeds aren't even listed. They're not even part of faith. They're not part of faith. They're produced by faith. The byproduct of faith, the evidence of faith, but not part of faith that saves us. So then, with that understanding of what faith is, then the question is, what does faith actually do? When we have faith, what does it do? Now, if you would look at James chapter 1, verse 1, we see the letter was written by James, the half-brother of our Lord, the servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. And who was it written to? To the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. In other words, to Jews, Messianic Jews in the first century, who have now been scattered from Jerusalem, primarily from and through persecution. If you go back to Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost, the Bible tells us that there were God-fearing Jews from every nation under heaven in Jerusalem that day when Peter got up and preached. And many of them were saved. Several thousand of them were saved that day. So they were from every nation under heaven. They're saved, and then they went home after that. You continue on in the book of Acts. You come to chapter 8, the beginning of chapter 8. Then you have reference to what occurred immediately after the stoning of Stephen. And there's persecution. This violent persecution breaks out, and it says the Jews were scattered from Jerusalem throughout Galilee and Samaria. So here's the deal. Listen carefully. The letter of James is one of the first, many believe it is the first letter written, the first New Testament book written. So now you have, think about this, you have these Jews who had put their trust in Jesus, either through hearing one sermon from Peter, or from some of the further teaching after that, those who remained in Jerusalem, and now they've been scattered. They have no church. They have no pastor. They don't have a New Testament. And they're wondering, okay, Jesus is real. I encountered him. What does that mean? How do I live that out? And some were questioning, yeah, I have faith. But their life was no different than it was before they encountered Christ. James writes his letter to address that audience. Those who had come to Christ, but their knowledge of who he is very rudimentary. And their understanding of what it means to live a Christian life is very basic. And he's writing to them in that context of persecution and trouble and trial on how to live out their faith, what it means. And essentially what he says is that faith works. Faith works. James put it this way. He said, I will show you my faith by what I do. I'm not saved by what I do, but I will show you my faith by what I do, because faith works. Faith is never alone. And in this short letter, five chapters, he paints a picture of this is what faith does. And if you're wondering the connection between the faith you have in Jesus and your daily life and how it should be lived, this will help you bring those two together and realize that faith works. Faith is never alone. We're not saved by what we do, but when we are saved, we're going to do things different than we did before. And he paints a picture. Now, this morning we don't have time, nor is it our focus to go through all of the letter, but to give an overview, here's essentially an outline of what faith does, an outline of the book, of the letter. This is what faith does. Faith transforms trouble into triumph. Faith resists temptation. Faith trusts in God's goodness. Faith obeys God's word. Faith demolishes discrimination. Faith wears work clothes. Faith tames the tongue. Faith produces wisdom. Faith submits to God, resists the devil. Faith avoids presumption. Faith treats people fairly. Faith endures suffering patiently. Faith prays for the afflicted. And faith confronts erring brothers. Again, in short, what James says is faith works. And you talk about faith, you don't have any deeds. I'll show you my faith, he said, by what I do. So essentially what James is saying is, it's not good enough to want a backyard paradise. It's not even good enough to build one. What you got to do is get out back and jump in the pool. That's the evidence. That's where the rubber meets the road, is when you authentically encounter Christ, you're going to be in the backyard. Your life is going to change. Because faith works. So as we begin now this week, this new series, I want to ask you to do several things. First of all, I would ask you to begin by doing some self-evaluation. Would you do that? Just ask yourself the question, do I have authentic, saving, living faith? And a corollary to that would be, is my life different than it was before I encountered Christ? It's not a matter of perfection or performance. It's a matter of direction and progress. Am I going in a different direction? Is my life changing? Is there evidence that what I've said I believe is really taken root in my heart? So that's the first question. And then I would ask you to do this. Would you commit to reading the book of James this week? It's just five short chapters. You read one chapter a day. It's not going to overwhelm you. Would you read the book of James this week? And as you do, here's the challenge. As you do, would you pray and say, God, would you reveal to me any areas in my life where my belief is disconnected from my behavior? As I read through this, would you just kind of put your finger if there's an area in my life, if there's an area where I'm just kind of convinced myself I'm out in the backyard and I'm really not? Would you reveal that to me as I read and I open myself to your Spirit? Would you just reveal that to me so that I can make sure that I'm really walking in faith, that my faith works, that I have authentic faith? I'm excited about what God's going to do as we go through this letter together. It's very practical. There'll be some challenging parts to it. There's some things that are really tough. But, I mean, we all want to live out our faith, right? We want to have assurance that we have that faith and live it out. That's what this letter is about, so I'm excited. So this week, we're going to read it together. Next week, we'll come back and we'll kind of jump in right at the beginning. He talks about trouble right off the bat. How many of you have ever had trouble in your life, okay? How many have trouble right now, okay? You don't want to miss next week, because we're going to talk about how do you deal with trouble and trials? How does faith change the way we respond and react in trouble? We're going to talk about that.